Hi everyone, Dave Biddle here. Got a great show for you today with Matt Baxendale. It's finally D-Day for David Gabriel George. What will DGG do? Seems like he's going to pick Tennessee, but maybe there'll be a surprise in the Buckeyes' favor today. We'll get into that. Also, The Athletic released their quarterback rankings for the 2026 season, and Julian Sain is fifth on the list. What do we think about that? We're going to talk about that and much more. All right, I'll talk to you guys soon. Good morning, Bucknoters. Welcome to the Bucknuts Morning 5. Here on Wednesday, July 22nd, 2026, I am Dave Biddle. Very happy to be joined by Matt Baxendale. Good to see you again. It's been a while since we've had you on the show, my man. Let's start with DGG, of course. It's finally D-Day for David Gabriel George. The crystal balls have been rolling in the last few days, not going Ohio State's way. Maybe he'll have a surprise announcement for us today, though, but seems like he's going to go to Tennessee. I guess Ole Miss is technically still in the mix, but seems like he's going to go to Tennessee. But I don't know, Bax. Maybe he'll surprise us today.
I doubt it. I've written this one off for a while, probably a good month or so. It's just felt like Tennessee was never going to have a number that they wouldn't meet. It felt to me like Tennessee has been so hard in on having to get this kid that they've blown up any semblance of any salary scaling with NIL. It's one of those things. It's like at the end of the day, Ohio State has so many commitments to NIL money that if you just totally blow it up and pay an insane amount of money for a tailback, then A, you're probably guaranteeing that Bo Jackson transfers after this year. And he's been pretty good on his own right. You can't pay some freshman more than your star who, as a freshman, rushed for 1,000 yards and a bunch of touchdowns, and then you had to renegotiate to keep him. So, A, that's a problem. B, it's not a position of uber need. You got a bunch of good young tailbacks right now. I mean, all your guys in that room, other than Jacoby Richardson, who just transferred in, are underclassmen. So, I felt like there was nothing Tennessee wouldn't say yes to in this for a while, and Ohio State simply just wasn't ready to go there. You know, it's one of those recruitings that, like, if this was back in the day and there was no NIL factor, then, yeah, very likely Ohio State probably gets him. But I just don't see Ohio State blowing up their entire salary structure for a running back from Tennessee.
And I'm okay with it. And I know he's originally from Canada. He goes to high school in Chattanooga, a very elite boarding school in Chattanooga, private school. But he's from, Quebec originally. But yeah, I mean, Tennessee's doing – they're just going completely all in. And there's two ways to look at this, I think. You could say, well, if they feel like he's the Jeremiah Smith of running backs, Ohio State should have gone all in too. Then there's the other side of the coin is like – first of all, maybe they think he's really, really – they obviously think he's very good backs. They think he's excellent. Maybe they don't think he's the Jeremiah Smith of running backs, though, because you're talking about Jeremiah Smith might go down as, like, the best receiver, at least this century, maybe more than that. And I like Ryan Day's overriding philosophy on this stuff. Like, they're going to be aggressive with NIL. They're going to be one of the top spenders overall, but they're not going to get in these bidding wars most of the time. They got into one with Jeremiah, but with Miami, and he took less money to stay here, even though he's still getting tons of money. Jeremiah took less money to stay at Ohio State. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not really conflicted by it. Like, I like Ryan Day's philosophy and his staff, Pantone, how they handle this. Would I have liked the Buckeyes get DGG? Hell yeah. But Tennessee's doing everything. I mean, some of the stuff I'm hearing, and who knows, Bax, as you know, like, some of this stuff might be, BS. But if all of it's true, they're pulling out all the stops. So I don't know. I don't fault Ohio State here.
I'm hearing private jets. I'm hearing his boarding school in Tennessee switched its uniform supplier to Adidas, who also is one who supplies Tennessee. You're hearing all kinds of craziness. And here's the thing. I kind of believe it because Tennessee has one thing going for it. that we certainly don't, and it's not going for us, all right? Tennessee is desperate, and desperation is a stinky cologne, my friend. So guess what? That's Tennessee.
I love that. That's a good line. Stinky cologne. Very pungent odor. And like Ohio State's going to be more than fine. I feel like a guy – we always talk about Bo Jackson, and I like Bo a lot. I know everybody does. A guy rushes for almost 1,100 yards as a true freshman, over 6 yards per carry. I feel like people don't talk about him enough. I think he's going to be, like, awesome this year. Isaiah West, Jacoby Jackson they brought in. But, like, the guy that I don't think we're talking about enough is Legend Bay. Like, and they're still going to get – they're going to get – they'll pivot and get a running back in this class.
And that's a factor too, Dave. Legend Bay is a factor because who was like paying Legend Bay's family to make sure he went there? Tennessee. Tennessee cannot lose another in-state kid to Ohio State. It's simply a non-starter for their rich guys. So that's why this is going this way. It's fine. Again, you're right. We have a great running back room. And Legend Bay is going to add something that we did not have on this team last year. Legend Bay is the kid in the entire program right now, other than probably Jeremiah, that Urban Meyer in his era would be so excited about. That explosive, game-breaker kind of guy. He can line up anywhere. Tennessee lost that, right? And honestly, if you had asked me, would you rather have DGG or Legend Bay? It's a lot more interesting conversation than people just looking at recruiting rankings would realize. Legend Bay brings something unique to the table. So Tennessee can't give an inch. Tennessee can't have any way that they don't win this recruiting battle in terms of any financial commitment, even if some of it is utterly asinine. Because if they weren't putting all this extra stuff on there, I think DGG would have ended up at OSU. They're just so over the top, it's hard to turn it down.
Got a couple of Tennessee fans in the chat. Hello, Tennessee fans. One guy said, I think he probably is talking about guys in the chat, people in the chat, because he's like, oh, y'all are mad now that you're not getting them. Bax and I look mad. Bax and I are not mad. We're still basking.
Dave, it's hard to be mad when we've been the center, like the island of relevancy is Ohio State, right? Tennessee tried landing on the island of relevancy at Neyland North a couple years ago and got chased off with spears, and they haven't come back since.
Didn't go well for you guys.
Yeah, you know, Neyland North. It's still the funniest thing I've ever heard.
It was like in the first quarter when that reality hit them, like, oh crap, we're gonna get blown out. Like Ohio State,
21-0 or 28-0. Yeah,
like, it was, oh shit, like they're gonna blow us out.
Yeah, it is what it is. And look, like I said, I think this comes down to a simple factor. I said it before. Desperation's a stinky cologne. That's all you have to know about this recruitment.
Love it. Got Brutus in here giving us the countdown. I love it. All right, let's switch gears here. DGG, you know, good luck to you with whatever you do. And I'll tell you what, last thing I'll say about this, even if he picks Tennessee today, that doesn't mean he's going to necessarily be there his second year or his third year.
Nico how that worked out.
Don't burn any bridges. Don't burn any bridges, my friends, because – and not that Ohio State ever would. They do a good job with that. Look at John Walker, for example. Not that John Walker is like the defensive tackle version of DGG, but like keep the – you never know. If something goes south with Tennessee and Heupel gets fired, and DGG might go right in the portal. We'll see. That's assuming he picks Tennessee. We'll see what happens. All right. Okay, switching gears. I want to get into a Ward manual. It's interesting, I mean, to say the least. I mean, first of all, if this internal investigation that they did, it really was an outside law firm that they brought in. It was nearly $12 million to investigate all this stuff in the athletic department. If it made Michigan look good, they would have immediately put that out there. Look at this. Look. You know, this outside law firm came in and said everything's cool. So obviously that wasn't the case. And if there's enough to get rid of Ward manual – why not fire him now? And if there's not enough, then why this end of the year stuff? It just seems so shady, and it's so on brand for them. I don't know. Well, I mean, I think I know what to think. I think Ward knows where the bodies are buried, so they're trying to like make sure he doesn't sue them. So give him a nice little buyout, nice golden parachute. Your thoughts on the whole Ward manual, internal investigation, everything that's going on up at Michigan right now?
Well, Michigan's you know, hypocrisy of their whole "we're the leaders and the best and Michigan men," blah, 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 right? It comes out to be total garbage once more. But here's the reality. Like you said, Ward Manuel knows where the bodies are. And from the jump 3 years ago, their plan, as enacted by Ward Manuel, was to stonewall, deny, argue, sue their way through that season to get their grubby hands on that banner, no matter what. And then after that, whoever, whatever happened, happened. And I think that they probably had an ironclad covenant with Ward, and then whenever the Sherwin Moore hiring turned out to be even a bigger eyesore in their eyes. I think that there's forces in Michigan that want a new start. But here's the reality. You and I have not read this report because no one's read the report. They just give an oral finding of their summary. Dave, wouldn't it be great instead of you know, writing articles all year on Bucknuts, we could just give like a little quick podcast and kind of summarize some decent things? They did the equivalent of you and me getting on a podcast and going, "Ohio State's really good. See you later." And that's it. Like, that's all they did. And so they don't want these details out in public because it is a horrific look for the University of Michigan. And they still have this utterly debunked notion that they're better than everyone else. And the reality is they're not. They played the Auburn play perfectly 3 years ago. That's the stiff arm everything, deny everything, us against the world, blah, 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 get us through this, and then who cares what happens afterwards. Ward was the middle of it. Ward did that play perfectly. Michigan should give him a raise for running that play perfectly. Look, this isn't the athletic department of some well-run, high ethics school. This is a dirty athletic department. They're in it to win it, baby, right? They've had so many scandals in different sports that it's not even funny. It's not just football, right? But at the end of the day, they were okay with that, and Ward was the guy running it. So they absolutely have to make sure that Ward gets whatever he wants in the door out, because like you said, there's a lot of bodies buried, and they don't want it coming back on them, period.
Very interesting. Now I'm curious to see who they're going to hire as their AD. Maybe if they don't get somebody who they really want, maybe they'll do an interim AD like they did. When Harbaugh was hired, that was actually an interim AD. Hackett was his name. He was a businessman and a Michigan grad. He just was an interim AD. So maybe they'll go that route till they find the full-time AD, but very interesting. All right, let's move on to the quarterback rankings. I think one of the cool things that The Athletic does every year, they rank all 138 projected starting quarterbacks in the FBS level in order. I feel bad for the guy that's like 138th. I forget who it is this year and what school it's at. I think it's somebody from like Texas State. I'm like, God, that would suck to be like 138th out of 138. Let's get into it. Julian is fifth on the list. Phil Steele has him number one. Todd McShay has him like ninth or 10th. I think that's ridiculous. Ninth or 10th. Fifth. I think that's somewhat fair. I wouldn't trade him for anybody. Let's go through the top, the guys that are ahead of him. So Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss is number one. Dante Moore from Oregon is number two. C.J. Carr from Notre Dame is number three. And then Darian Mensah from Miami's latest portal get. Darian Mensah is number four. That's the one I have a problem with. I think he's a good quarterback, but I think very few college football programs will take Darian Mensah over Julian Sands. Sands fifth, and they did it in tiers, which I like too. And Sands in tier one. There's just a couple other guys in tier one. Drew Mestemaker, who is at Oklahoma State now. Mm-hmm. Arch Manning is seventh. I was surprised Arch Manning wasn't like first. I thought that was just like a default when you're doing these lists. And then Sam Levitt, who's now at LSU, rounds out tier one. We'll get to like where the Big Ten quarterbacks are. Other Big Ten quarterbacks, but just react to Sand being fifth, the guys that are ahead of him, and whatever else you want to say about tier one there.
Yeah, well, first of all, number 138 is probably thrilled his name's there because he's probably fighting for the starting job, so he's probably thinking, sweet, they think I'm going to start. So start with that. But look, here's the reality. Anytime you have one of these lists in the offseason, there's always something done to kind of turn the screws on Ohio State. You know why? Because there's a million of us, and every time we see something that's a perceived slight to our football team, we get really, really grumpy and loud about it. ESPN literally had a business model for 10 years of trying to piss off Ohio State fans because they knew it got them ratings. So putting, you know, CJ Carr and Darian Mensah ahead of Julian Sain, who is a Heisman finalist coming back, is just another example of that in the long run. Look, their defense would be, well, you know, it's the top tier. This is really tight, and they're all in that top tier, blah, 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 blah. That's how they do this, guys. Look, I talked about this in the bucket a couple weeks ago. We're in propaganda season. Propaganda season is where they set the tone. Propaganda season is where they try to rank every SEC team in the top 25 so that they all have a bunch of ranked team wins so that they can go back to their ranked team rankings and talk about how many ranked teams they've beaten, even though that ranked team is 4-8 at the end of the year. It's all the same. It's all the same. It's the propaganda of the summer for college football. And at the end of the day, I certainly don't think Julian Sain's the fifth best quarterback in college football. I think you can make an argument. He's no worse than third on that list. And the reality is, I watched some of those games where, you know, everybody's talking about Dante Moore right now. And, you know, we joked that he didn't go pro because he really didn't want to be a New York Jet. Maybe Dante Moore didn't go pro because he's got stuff to work on right now, too. I watched that Oregon game at Penn State. People forget this because Penn State turned out to be such a dumpster fire last year. But there was times where Moore was making horrific basic misses. And then he'd make a perfect throw back-to-back and they'd score. And you go, what the heck just happened? There's obviously talent there. But Sain is much more consistent. I think Sain standing in these sort of things too is easy to crap on by the national media because the end of the day and the end of the season – there was a couple misfires from him in what was otherwise a largely flawless campaign. You know, this is the first guy to beat Michigan since COVID. How about that? Maybe that ought to be thought into it. And at the end of the day, all these other guys look at hype. It's offseason. And part of it's always poking the Ohio State bear, right? And our propaganda is different, too. Notre Dame is a QB ahead of us. This is their best time of year. Even though I actually think Notre Dame's legitimately good this year, this is the best time of year. Notre Dame in the summer gets so much stuff to make themselves feel hot, puffed up and happy about it, right? Whereas Ohio State, they always down our things just a little bit, just turn a little bit of a screw. And it gets us all fired up and full of piss and vinegar till the season starts. So that's what this is. That's my view of it.
Dan Rubin and I have been laughing about it like all spring and like not just the summer, all spring and summer, just like this. I've called it kind of jokingly the Julian Sain slander just because that kind of flows. Obviously, it's not literally slander. We'll see, and I love that the football's almost here because we're going to find out. And everybody who said Julian Sain's like overrated is going to eat their words. And maybe I'll be eating my words. It's a good thing about sports. We're going to find out.
Why you play 100%. The games.
That's damn right.
Why you play the games.
Yeah, there's no ambiguity. We're going to find out 100% one way or the other. I love that. I love a lot of things about sports. That's one of the things I love about sports. All right, let's look at some of these other rankings. Leading tier two. Ninth overall in the quarterback rankings and number one in tier two. There's seven different tiers. Is Mayava from USC. He's number nine in the country. Jaden Mayava from USC. One thing that Lincoln Riley does well is he can get quarterbacks into New York and maybe even win a Heisman. So
I thought he'd be in tier one, to be real honest. I thought he's better than some of those guys you've mentioned on that list. And USC has a team that has a chance to make the Big Ten title game this year. So
I would take.
I like him more than Arch. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would take him over Arch too. I would take him over Sam Levitt. And I think Levitt's a really good quarterback. He was really good at Arizona State 2 years ago, banged up last year, now at LSU. But I agree. I think Mayava should be in tier one. Not too far behind Mayava is Josh Hoover from Indiana, who transferred in from TCU. He's 12th. Keep in mind,
I think he's getting the Indiana shine there, man. Like, they're like, look what Fernie Mendoza did whenever he went there. He had an unbelievable time after transferring. Sig can coach quarterbacks. I think that's a huge factor because Hoover on his own was fine. He's not. Then again, that's the same about Mendoza before Mendoza went there too. There's an Indiana credit being given now. And I think everybody realizes, speaking of propaganda, how badly they boogered up last summer on Indiana. You know, ESPN didn't even have Indiana ranked in their silly little FPI last year.
Like, wow. Well, like everybody thought 2024 was a fluke. It was a harbinger of things to come. It wasn't a fluke.
Look, I said 9-3. I had them somewhere around 20th. I'm not not guilty of underestimating them too. They had an we're gonna be like old, and we're gonna look back at that and go, can you believe Indiana won a national title? Like that's how it's gonna be, right? That like there will be kids going to Indiana in 2120 and being like, you know, we won a national title, yeah, 100 years ago. Hey, we're still more recent than you, Iowa. Like that's how it's gonna be. It's unbelievable that Indiana's the defending national champion.
It's one of the craziest. I've said it's not one of the craziest. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in sports, especially yes. as closely as we followed it. Especially somebody like me growing up in the Dayton area, and I've been a Buckeye since as long as I can remember. We'd go to Indiana pretty much every other year, take over the stadium, and
that was their satellite picture day.
And that exactly, and they finally wised up. We'd always say they should like raise the ticket prices just for the Ohio State game. Finally, they did that.
Yeah.
We were saying that privately. We weren't like telling them that they should do it. And now to see them go from like literally the worst Power Four team ever in college football to make the playoff 1 year and then win the national championship in year two, it's just incredible to me. Hopefully Ohio State knocks them off their high horse this year, though. All right, moving right along here. And by the way, I do want to mention this. Mendoza last year in these rankings, 17th. So I think that's another reason to your point, they're putting Hoover at 12th. They're like, okay, wait, we are way underrated. Mendoza last year. Here's their top five from last year backs. Top five. Number one was Klubnik. Number two, Nussmeier from LSU, who was a late third-day pick. Barely was even picked. Okay. Number three was Lenora Sellers, who's back this year at South Carolina.
He got hurt last year.
He's ranked 18th this year. John Mateer was ranked fourth last year. He's back this year. He was banged up. Mateer's 16th this year. He's at Oklahoma. He's back. And then DJ Lagway was fifth last year. He's now 42nd, and now he's at Baylor. So their top five last year was really, really bad. So hopefully hopefully Julian at least proves that he deserves to be in the top five. I think Julian's going to prove he should be in the top one. All right, going right along.
Desperation is a stinky cologne talking about Tennessee. Man, there's nothing that Florida has on Tennessee in that front. Holy cow. Imagine being a Gator fan right now. You threw all your hopes last couple years into DJ Lagway. Your coach got fired, and Lagway's like, nah, I'm going to go to Baylor instead. Baylor. This is just amazing.
Now he's ranked 42nd. He's in tier four. Let's go to – there's five Big Ten quarterbacks in tier three. So these are guys that are still considered. And one of them is not Bryce Underwood. We'll get to him in a minute. Michigan might need a refund. I won't be surprised if Tommy Carr beats him out.
Tommy Carr is better than him.
Yeah, I think Tommy Carr might beat him out like this year. And Tommy Carr, as we know, didn't have anywhere near the hype as CJ did. He was kind of an under the radar, well, as much as you can be if your last name's Carr, under the radar recruit compared to his older brother. And, you know, you talk to people up there, he actually looked competent in the spring other than Underwood. All right, the five guys that are in tier three, number 20 overall, Damon Williams from Washington. Number 21, right behind him, Malik Washington from Maryland. 24th, Rocco Beck from Penn State. It's Iowa State East over there in Happy Valley this year. They just brought the whole team with them, including the coach. Nico is ranked 25th right there. And then Lindsey from Minnesota is ranked 29th. So those are the five in tier three. And then in tier four, there you have Bryce Underwood. He's number 31 overall. I still think that's overrated. I wouldn't put him 31st overall. 36th is the Wisconsin transfer quarterback, Colton Joseph. I think that's going to be a good fit for Fickell. This kid was from Old Dominion, rushed for over 1,000 yards. That's going to be a good fit for Wisconsin, having a running quarterback. He can throw it a little bit too. Calandria from Nebraska is 39th. And then Caden Hauser from Illinois is 41st, rounding out the Big Ten quarterbacks in tier four. React to those for me, my friend.
Well, they put a lot of hype and hope into kids that had good freshman years. Washington and Lindsey are the two that particularly jumped to mind from Maryland and Minnesota. That's sort of funny to me because if you compare those two to the freshman year that Bryce Underwood had, there's not a comparison. Lindsey and Washington were much better. Underwood is there, I think, purely because of the helmet that he's wearing. If he was on another less hyped team, he probably would have fallen a lot further until we can see him complete a forward pass, which is literally what OSU said after the game, make him stand in the pocket and throw the ball. we'll win. I think I forget who said that, but that was literally almost verbatim the quote. It was make them stand in the pocket and we'll win. You know, Underwood's wildly overrated. But from that list, you know, look, there's a couple other guys that were mentioned that I think I'll be interested to see how they compare over the course of the year to a kid like Hoover. Because, like we said, Hoover might be a little high on based on what he's done on his own, but the Indiana factor's pushing him up. Kind of the Michigan factor's pushing up Underwood despite what he's done. You know, it also tells you a little bit of how some of these teams are going to be falling down. I mean, the reality is coming into the season last year, Illinois and Nebraska had much better quarterback situations. You know, as much crap as we gave to Raiola, he had him at 5-1 and, you know, looked like he was a pretty good quarterback before some injuries happened and Nebraska things happened. So, you know, those are definitely things that I think you look at it and you go, huh. UCLA is going to be a fascinating one this year with Nico. Yep. They're trying to do what Indiana did, which was take the JMU coach, bring half the JMU team in, plug in, you know, some Big Ten resources and hope things go well. And the reality, too, is UCLA has a manageable schedule. I picked them to make a bowl game in the bucket this past weekend.
I think Chesney was a great hire. I think that was a fantastic hire by UCLA. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
There's a path where they win 8 or 9 games this year, Dave. I didn't pick them to win that many, but there's a real path where UCLA is all of a sudden good right off the bat. Third year, a guy in Nico. Last year was a disaster, but this year is much better in terms of the coaching around him. Look, we all knew that Sean Foster was – a desperation, silly hire. The guy had never even been a coordinator. They took the UCLA is in a position where they haven't been good for a while. Their resources aren't great. They don't have a lot of fans at their game. Their stadium's an hour from campus. It's kind of a crappy overall situation. I get why they wanted to play at SoFi. It's much closer to UCLA's campus. And the reality is Foster was not ready to be a head coach. Yeah, I don't know. He was an excellent running back coach, and they wanted a guy who could wear the brand. And you knew that wasn't going to work the moment he showed up at Big Ten Media Days. He's like, Sean Foster, coach of UCLA, we're in Los Angeles. I'll take your questions. I'm like, oh, boy, this is not a good start for you, bud. So they gassed him after, like, 4 games. They were better with, like, Rick Neuheisel's, you know, sunshine kid calling plays than they were at any point during the Foster tenure. Then they brought in a really good staff that knows what they're doing. So that's one that I'm going to be really interested to watch this year. And then you talk about new coaches in the Big Ten. I, from the start, have said that Penn State failed upwards with their hire on that job. That is, they didn't even make, they couldn't even get a hold of the guy that they ended up hiring for a month. And guess who the right hire was? The guy that couldn't get a hold of for a month. I mean, like, let's be real here. And they brought it. I mean, the Penn State Cyclones are going to be excellent this year, because they kept a lot of the guys on defense, and they brought in all these Iowa State guys. I think Penn State's going to be pretty darn good. I'm actually glad we're not playing them this year.
That's so weird. It's so weird they're not playing Penn State this year. Like, every year weird. Since 1993. Last time they didn't play was 1992.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's – well, you know, this is the thing. We've always said it for 30 years. They're not our rival. Michigan's our rival. They're like, no, you're our rival. We're like, go play Pitt. Well, now we're seeing how it plays out. And, you know, I think Penn State is that's the thing. The last 10 years, Penn State hasn't been saying that we're their rival. They've been just like, it's always Ohio State. Well, it doesn't have to be Ohio State this year, boys. You get to dodge us, at least until a Big Ten championship setting, if we both make it there. So it's probably a nice break for Penn State. You know, we talked about this. Penn State, on paper, is a top 2 or 3 program in the conference. They have everything there. Penn State has no reason not to do what Ohio State is doing right now. And I look at Penn State and I think, man, you know, it's hard to get out of that flow, right? It's hard to get out of that flow. Steve Campbell is a 1,000,000,000% upgrade over James. Can't win a big game, Frank. Don't get me started. But at the end of the day, The reality for Penn State has been Franklin was terrified in big games. He'll go down as their Cooper. Won a lot, didn't win the big ones. Penn State also, the biggest thing that they've had is that they have had the psychological bludgeoning of losing to Ohio State every game. It was not a hope we can win. It's when will it go wrong? And much like Michigan getting that break in 2020 when Ohio State would have beat them by 60, when Harbaugh cried COVID and they avoided the beating, which Ohio State still needs to claim that as a win in the rivalry. If I'm Ohio State, I tick it up by one and say they ducked us. That's a win. That's a forfeit. That's how I would be claiming it if I was the Ohio State athletic director right now. That's my campaign to take over as the Ohio State athletic director after Ross Bjork. I will make 2020 a win on paper for Ohio State and put all the wins back from Jim Tressel from 2010. But the thing is, Michigan dodged us. They got to have a reset in that rivalry. They got to come out with not being the guys who lost last year again all over them. So now they're going to get a new coach. They're not going to have to worry about losing again to Ohio State. If they go back out and have a Penn State-y kind of season where they're pretty good and they don't have to play the Buckeyes, you could see them win 10 or 11 games. Just the truth.
I like there's a little Notre Dame slander out of nowhere. The exec just jumped in here and says Notre Dame is butt cheeks. They've won nothing. I'm like, hey, okay.
Is that Mr. Bucknut's burner right there?
Was it 88? I was like in elementary school. Was it 80? Yeah, it was 88 when they won a national championship.
I mean they played I've seen us, them they lose in a national title game.
Yeah, exactly. They played us for the title 2 years ago.
What was the last time they beat Ohio State? 1935 or something like that?
But yeah, pre-World War II era. Yes. That was the last.
You had the guys who were like calling the game like, well, here comes the Gipper on the field. Massa to the inside, run on the outside. Nah. It's like how the announcers were back then.
If you have time for one more, you got time for one question from our chat?
Sure.
LV Buckeyes, we'll get you out of here on this. You might. This is kind of a broad question, so maybe take some time and think about it. I can just start going on some diatribe if you need me to. LV Buckeyes says, is there a national storyline that Bax is looking closely at this offseason?
Yes.
What is that?
It is a macro story, and it is going to be watching the SEC because the SEC now is lost. And by lost, I mean they think it's their birthright to be the national champions and the best conference in the country. Like, it's a given. It's like total cognitive dissonance if you don't start with the SEC is the best ever, Big Ten sucks. They have now not won the national title 3 straight years. They are a conference in flux, right? The Lane Kiffin story alone is going to be hilarious to watch this year because LSU won't be as good as LSU wants them to be, but they'll be better. And Kiffy, this is full on Tennessee Kiffy we're going to get this season. But the SEC as a whole has to play a ninth conference game this year. That means they have to excuse away now 8 more losses in conference. They excused away so many losses. And you have to remember, I talked about this. The propaganda is that ESPN's in their pocket. ESPN owns the network that they're on, has a giant vested interest in the SEC. That's why their silly fake rankings have 12 SEC teams in the top 23. The SEC right now is in the most vulnerable I've seen it in 20 years. This is the most vulnerable they've been since Auburn got left out in 2004 so that Oklahoma and USC could play in the BCS championship game. And the reality for the SEC now is they are scared. All the fans down there don't understand what's happening. Bama's in a weird spot with no Nick Saban. Is the boar really going to work out there? Do you trust Bama right now? I don't necessarily trust Bama right now. Kirby's talking about how they need to leave the NCAA, and I'm like, buddy, you're not making the national championship game anyway. I don't know what we're talking about here. You know, we've made fun of Tennessee throwing silly money at things. And look, the SEC is still doing SEC things. I think they're looking with covetous eyes at Texas Tech, like, that's a school that could fit our conference. Great. Let's sue our way to whatever we can get. But they are in a bad spot because who's the best team in that conference this year?
In the SEC? I would say Georgia.
That's who I have, but the dogs have fallen short the last few years.
Yeah.
Nobody really trusts Texas, and Texas is in that weird phase right now with the rest of the SEC where they're like, they're not really SEC, right? They're not really SEC. They're still too new. They're the stepbrother that we added into the league still. That's how they're looking at them. A&M always blows it. Even the Elko did a great job with them. A&M always blows it. LSU and Ole Miss are going to be so busy shooting darts at each other that they're going to lose games they shouldn't because of that whole thing. Tennessee's in a rough spot. You know, I'm interested to see if Lenora Sellers can do something to make South Carolina better, but they're not going to win more than 7 games. The SEC as a whole right now is hurting, and I love it. And that's going to be the story of the year. Because if the SEC does not win a national title this year, the narrative is so dead and buried, it's not even funny. You're going to have kids that go through their entire college career without an SEC national champ if they don't win one this year. That's astounding based on recent history.
Great stuff from Matt Baxendale. Really appreciate it, Bax. You guys read his, I'm sure most of you do already, read his award-winning column every Sunday on Bucknuts. It is the bucket. Thanks, Bax. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks for having me on. And as always, go Bucks.
And thanks to all of you guys out there. We appreciate it very much. And as Bax just said, go Bucks.